Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of the iTrix Magic Week in Review. This is Michael Lauk with you once again. First, let me apologize to everyone if I sound funny, and we've already had a wee technical issue, to be honest. It is because I'm not in my normal location. I'll be completely honest with you all. As sad as this might sound, my dog is sick. She doesn't feel well, so I am recording in a location, sitting on the couch, so she can lay here with me, so she's not alone while she's having her issues. So if I'm echoey, I apologize, and if at some point some of her snores come through, there's really not a lot of any kind of microphone can do that will cut out the sound of a 100-pound bulldog when she really starts snoring, so I apologize for that too. All that being put aside, this is a second episode this week. And the reason is we have a very special guest, Mr. Gabe Fuhari from Potter & Potter Auctions, who's going to talk about auctions in general and collecting magic with auctions, but a very special auction they have going on this Saturday. If you've been paying attention to iTrix, we have previewed it. But Gabe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Nice to talk to you, Michael.
Well, thanks for coming on. And why don't we just jump right in, and why don't you tell everyone why they should be excited about your next auction on Saturday.
Well, we've got a great lineup on Saturday, April 26th. The auction starts at 10 a.m. in our gallery in Chicago, but you can bid online too if you'd like, either before or live during the auction. And we've really got something for everyone. Great vintage posters. We've got some rare magazines and books. We've got signed photographs. We've got props owned and used by some of the great magicians of the last 100 years. And we've got more modern collectible items, cups and balls, and vintage props and apparatus made by a wide variety of people, Tatelbaum and Thayer and Abbott's and Owen and on and on. So there's really a good selection. At a wide variety of price ranges, really, there's something for everyone in the auction.
Now, we have already put a link up to the auction catalog, and hopefully a lot of our listeners have looked through it. And if you all haven't, go look that up on iTrix, find it, or go to the Potter & Potter site. Because I think one thing that will surprise people is that magic auctions are not basically for David Copperfield and a few other deep-pocketed collectors. There really is a wide variety of things. If to the average person out there, you know, the magician, maybe somebody is looking for a couple cool things to have in their office, something like that.
Yeah, totally.
What would you suggest?
Well, I mean, we have posters in the auction, for example, for Cheng Ling Su and Servais Leroy, which, you know, some of them are get to be pricey, but we have other posters that are, you know, 80, 90, 100 years old, which, you know, we regularly sell for $100, $200, $300, you know, things that are real, authentic, vintage material. They look great. You know, nobody's printing things, no matter how good the reproduction is, that are of this quality anymore. They would fit in perfectly in an office, in a home, that kind of thing. There are signed photos of many of the magicians that we all look back on with awe. Thurston and Imro Fox, Horace Golden, Germain, Adelaide Herman. There are Houdini autographs in the auction. You know, so there's really a wide variety. If you like close-up magic, there's a beautiful signed and inscribed Di Vernon photograph. There are playing cards that he used that are in the auction. There's a vanishing birdcage owned by Cardini. An original chop cup, one of the original models made and sold by Al Wheatley. So it's a you know, and many of these things start at, you know, $25 or $50 as the opening bid. So, you know, when you think about what you spend on, you know, reproduction, very often you can buy something like this very affordably for the same price or only a little bit more.
As a nice coincidence there, this week's iTrix history article was kind of a quick recap on the career of Cardini. So some of our listeners might be a little bit more interested in him than they were a week or so ago, I hope.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, we had a huge auction last year of all of Cardini's personal memorabilia, his tuxedo and playing cards, the gloves he wore, and all that kind of material.
That had the watch reel in it too, right?
We sold a watch reel. We sold billiard balls, a monocle. Basically his whole life was in the auction. It was kind of a record-setting sale for us. We ended up selling his tuxedo for an astonishing $72,000.
Wow. Now, just as an aside, hopefully people know your name. You've written on magic. You're a magician. Is this like the greatest job in the world? Do you ever just sit amongst all this stuff and go, wow, what a great day?
Well, I have a lot of moments like that when you open a box and it's like Christmas, you know, unpacking all these things that people send in for us to sell. There's no question about that. You know, but there's also not enough time to play with it as I would like, because, you know, it is a job. You do have to catalog it and photograph it and inventory it and, you know, and ship it out. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. You wish you could own all the stuff and enjoy it all, you know, forever, but you also have to sell it and make a living and pass it on to other people. But, you know, when a big shipment comes in, or when we go up and pack a collection up, and it can be a lot of fun.
Be honest, did you wear Cardini's monocle?
I never wore it. No, we spent a lot of time photographing it, but no, I never wore it. But it's a good question.
It does have to be, though, in a way, kind of like being in the world's greatest magic museum with just an ever-changing display.
Exactly. The exhibits are always changing. The focus is always different. I've learned a ton by putting together these catalogs. It's like an interactive museum where you can buy things. And it's a real pleasure.
You mentioned your catalogs. Your catalogs are beautiful. They are right up there. I have many auction catalogs from all over the world. I went to art school. I mentioned that on the podcast a lot. And that's something you learn in art school, is that one of the best resources to be able to look at art you might not ever get a chance to see, because a lot of art auctions are going into private hands, is to collect auction catalogs. And so I've collected them for years, and I love your auction catalogs. They are beautiful.
Okay.
And for anybody who's interested in the history of magic, they are real resources to be able to look back and see things like, you know, some of these, the pictures of the costumes, for example, and some of the props that you illustrate. I always love looking through your catalog.
Oh, thanks. Well, we work really hard on them. And in case anybody's not aware, we have real printed full color 8.5 by 11 catalogs for almost every auction we do. We work very hard on the research and the writing and the descriptions of the items to try to make sure we're presenting kind of the story behind the item when it's appropriate. So in this one coming up, for example, one of the featured lots is a prop built and used by Okito as the finale to his act for, you know, 20 years or more. And we spent a lot of time reading up on it, learning how he used it, how it worked. It's a very intricate and complex kind of prop. But so we devote a whole page to explaining and describing the trick, when it was used, how it was used, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's as someone who loves magic, I kind of feel it's our responsibility to do its history a little bit of justice and give credit where credit is due.
One of the other things I like about your catalogs is when you flip through it, you do realize just what all is at one of your auctions. And one of the things I think that gets overlooked a little bit because they're not maybe as sexy, for lack of a better word, as some of the props or costumes, but something that a lot of people collect and maybe have never thought about this avenue is books. You always have great books.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that was my gateway into collecting magic was, you know, looking for the next hunk of information in a book. And, you know, in this auction coming up on Saturday, we've got something that's very hot right now is Carl Fulvis material, for example. It's modern, but it's pretty hard to get a hold of. We have a couple complete sets of his periodicals. One is Swindle Sheet, and the other one is Rigmarole. And like I said, even though they were published in the last 10, 15 years, they're not easy to get a hold of. So guys who are interested in sleight of hand and contemporary things that are a bit unusual or uncommon, we've got those kinds of things. But we also have books going back to this 18th century in this auction. I know at least one book on artificial memory dates, I think, 1797. I could be off on the date there. The Man Who Was Erdnase, for guys who are interested in that story, books inscribed and signed by Thurston, books on spiritualism, deluxe edition of the Larry Jennings book by Mike Maxwell. Of course, all of Houdini's books and first editions are in the auction. Cards as Weapons by Ricky Jay, inscribed and signed. And my favorite book of all time, Greater Magic by John Northern Hilliard. We had one of the expanded editions in the auction. But there's a lot of good stuff there. Magazines and Slidini restricted edition and on and on and on. You don't need to hear a laundry list from me, but I you have good taste. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, everything from antique books to comic books, I know, have occasionally graced your auctions.
Some in this one.
That's right. Some of the things from Gibson's estate. Am I right about that? Yeah. I'm a big comic book fan, and I'm a big Walter Gibson fan. So that caught my eye. That always catches my eye.
Oh, cool.
Which I hope our listeners at this point are kind of getting the idea that there really is something for everyone in these auctions. And that the other thing that you mentioned but kind of slides by sometimes is that even though it's a live auction, you don't have to be in Chicago to participate.
That is true.
And how...
Yeah, most people aren't, Michael, believe it or not. Most people are bidding either on the phone, so we give them a call during the auction and they bid live with the auctioneer in the room. Other people send their bids to us in advance and then we bid on their behalf. We have somebody on our staff doing it for them here in the room. And then many other people log on to the internet and bid on the computer. And you can do that from your desktop, basically. Some people even do it on their phone, although I wouldn't recommend it. And you can bid live in real time with the auction as it takes place on auction day.
And this is a very convenient time for you to drop that website to be able to do that.
Well, there's a direct link on the homepage, on our homepage, potterauctions.com, which will take you right to the site, which is liveauctioneers.com. But if you go on our site, potterauctions.com, and click through, it'll take you directly to where you need to go. And that's the way I would recommend doing it.
Okay, great. If you can sit still for just a second, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about how auctions work. I think a lot of people have real questions, and the only auction they're familiar with is eBay.
Okay.
All right. Stick with us, everyone. We'll be back in just a second.
iTricks.com.
Congratulations. You just survived tax season 2013. If you're looking ahead to tax season 2014 and thinking that a few charitable donations would probably help you out, we'd like to point out that iTricks regularly runs stories about lots of great charities that are associated with magicians, usually because magicians are helping them raise funds. Today, though, I'd like to talk to you about two charities that are actually for magicians. Both the Society of American Magicians and the International Brotherhood of Magicians have funds to help magicians who have found themselves sick or are just in a time of need. At the IVM, it is the Magician Support Fund, and in the SAM, it is the Houdini Fund. If you have a little extra, you're looking to donate, we urge you to contact your local IBM or SAM representative to learn how you can support these great funds to help support our fellow magicians. Thanks.
And we are back. Thanks for sticking with us. Michael Lauk here with Gabe Fahari from Potter & Potter Auctions. They have a big collection going was on the block, under the gavel. I don't know what the term is. This Saturday. And as we've mentioned, you don't have to be there. You don't have to be with you in Chicago to be a part of this auction. And I think we should probably take some time and talk about how that will work. Most of our listeners are going to be familiar with shopping online and eBay, of course. But eBay isn't quite a normal auction. So maybe we should talk about some of the differences.
Okay. Well, where should we start?
Okay. First of all, let's say you're an online bidder. You're sitting at home in front of your computer. You're not driving and doing this on your iPhone.
Right.
Which is illegal, I know, in Illinois. But
yes.
I think we can still do it in Missouri, but
well, not for long.
Well, yeah. But if you're sitting in front of your desktop, you're going to have, you said it was liveauctions.com?
Liveauctioneers.com.
Okay, liveauctioneers.com. What am I going to see? Is there going to be like a streaming image of the actual auction? Am I just going to see a counter and a total? How will that work?
So you register for the auction on LiveAuctioneers, and you get approved. Because, you know, we don't want everybody and, you know, everybody and their brother to necessarily get approved. You know, that's just a way to kind of root out some bots and things from signing up for auctions. Anyway, so you sign up, you get approved, day of the auction, you go to the website, liveauctioneers.com, and you click the button that says Bid Live. Screen pops up, and here's lot one. There's a picture of the lot, and there's a button at the bottom that says bid, and you watch basically a stream, a Java application will show you where the bidding is and what the next bid is. It's 50, now it's 60, now it's 70, now it's 80, and it just keeps, the ticker just keeps going and going and going, and you can jump in at any time by clicking that button, you know, to bid the next increment above where it stands. And, you see when the lot is coming to an end, when the bidding kind of slows down, it says fair warning, fair warning. Sometimes we say fair warning two or three times, maybe four, just to give everybody a shot. You can bid again or not, and then the lot closes and is sold, and it says sold for $100 or sold for $50 or sold for $1,000. And then the next lot comes up, lot two, and here's a photo, and the starting bid is $50, now $60, now $70. So it's like being in the room, except you're not in the room, and you have to click a button as opposed to raise your hand.
Okay, and unlike some auctions that, well, let's say at eBay, that people are going to be familiar with, there's no choice as to what you're going to, you know, you can't, well, I'm just going to knock them up by a dollar. There's a set increment. What generally can one expect to be the increment? Is it basically always $10?
No, it's predetermined. So, based on like the range in which the bidding is taking place. So below $100, it's 10 bucks. Then it goes to 25 up to about $500. Then it goes to $50 above $500. Then it goes to 100. So, you know, it based on the value of the item, the increment, gets larger and larger.
Okay. That makes sense. That all seems pretty easy, honestly. I'm sitting here. My wife's not around. One of those signed Thurston books comes up because of all my Thurston stuff. I don't have an autograph yet.
Okay.
So she's not around. She doesn't notice. I win. Now what happens?
You'll get an invoice. Most likely you'll get an invoice the day after the auction. Sometimes it takes us two or three, depending on how many lots we have to, you know, we have to pull together, et cetera, et cetera. You send us your payment, we send you the stuff.
Okay. Now
that's it.
All right. There we go. Nice and easy. What about shipping and all that kind of good, fun stuff?
That's where the day or two will take, will factor in. We need to basically, let's say you buy three lots. Well, what if you buy a die box, a letter, and a coffee mug? Well, we've got to figure out how that's all going to get packed up and what the cost of shipping will be. But we handle all that, and we'll send you an invoice with shipping, and you pay us, and we ship it out.
Great, great. Are there any other fees that I'm going to come across?
Well, if you're familiar with eBay and not a traditional auction, you're probably not familiar with what is known as the buyer's premium, which was invented maybe 25 years ago. And this is a premium you pay to the auction house on top of the winning bid. It's basically how we make a living. So the buyer's premium is usually between 15 and 25% depending on the auction you go to. And some of them are even higher than that. But the easiest way to explain it is if the auctioneer brings down the hammer and you win the lot for $100, in our case, our buyer's premium is 20%. So you would pay an additional 20%. You would pay $120 for that item. So you just need to factor that in when you're bidding. If you want to pay a net price of $100 for something, you should probably only bid up to 80 if the buyer's premium is 20%, because the 20% on top of the $80 would make it $96, or roughly what you've budgeted for the item. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I'll admit I'm familiar with this. But for those that aren't, some people I know I've talked to see this as, because they don't necessarily see the fees in something like an eBay, or when they see auctions on television, this often doesn't get mentioned. I know some people are kind of put off by this, but it's always been my view, and I have a couple friends who are actually in the antique business, and what they've always said is what they feel is otherwise the seller is going to be selling, you know, paying percentages. I mean, the percentage is getting paid either way. And what that means is those starting prices will just be that much more, because the seller knows they're going to pay up front. You know, if it gets sold, do you agree with, I mean, is that a fair assessment?
I guess I'm not really clear on the question, but the buyer's premium is, you know, I, as the auction house, have to print the catalog and have the staff to run the auction and, you know, pay for the light and the heat and, you know, all my overhead to run the sale. So the way I make a living is I charge a premium to the buyer, and I charge a small premium to the seller of the item, the consignor. And out of that, I pay all my expenses, and hopefully at the end of the day, there's something left over and I can make a living. And so, That's the reason for that buyer's premium, and also the seller's premium on the other end, what the consignor pays me to represent them as an auctioneer.
Okay, that's fair enough. And you said yours was 20%. And another thing, how the auction works, it's all included in your catalog, correct? So that,
yeah, there's terms and conditions in there. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. If you want to get into the minutia, though, you know, there's plenty of fine print there that covers all the different situations you could run into. Or just call us or email us. You know, we're a real physical location. Everything is on display. All those posters are up on the wall in a gallery with hardwood floors and showcases. Everything is available for, you know, preview right now, as a matter of fact, if somebody wants to stop by.
Okay. You're in Chicago. Why don't you throw out the address?
3759 North Ravenswood Avenue, Suite 121. And that's Chicago, Illinois, 60613. We're really not very far from Wrigley Field.
Which is pretty easy to get to, if anybody...
Yeah, you can walk there from our place, actually.
All right. So are you in the Wrigleyville neighborhood?
We're in the Ravenswood neighborhood. Okay. We're just west of Wrigleyville. Yeah.
All right. I've been to Chicago a few times where I was sober enough to know what was going on. But, I think that's all fair enough. Like I said, for some reason, people I've talked to who haven't been to auctions before, for some reason that premium kind of throws them. But I think you explained it well, and I hope people are going to be a little bit more at ease with this because your auctions are really a great and surprisingly affordable way to start a cool magic collection.
The other thing you should remember if you're new to auctions is try it out. You know, if you're a little bit nervous, maybe throw in a low bid, and see what happens. I mean, you may be surprised. There are very, very many things that, you know, like I said, do go for relatively low prices, and nothing ventured, nothing gained. You know, you gotta swing the bat if you want to hit the ball. And if you don't, try again on the next one. You know, but that'll at least give you an experience, a little bit of an understanding of how it works, and then you can decide if it's for you or if it's not. But you know, you might be surprised. And for beginning collectors, we have things in this auction like, you know, 50 or 100 vintage books in one lot, or 10 or 20 or 50 vintage props in one lot. You know, on a per item basis, they sell for relatively low prices. I even have dealers buy from me occasionally and resell the stuff because they're such a good deal.
Yeah, my grandpa, who was a big auction goer, used to always say, look, every auction goes for $20, goes for $1 million. Somebody throws out the first bid. Might as well be you.
There you go.
You know, sometimes you get lucky.
There you go.
Well, I tell you what, I know you're busy with the auction coming up, and I think we've taken up a bunch of your time today. So why don't we just take a second to, first of all, thanks for sitting down with us. I really appreciate it.
And, thank you, Michael.
Why don't you give us all your digital vitals one more time so people can get in on this auction Saturday morning?
All right. Visit us at potterauctions.com or give us a call at 773-472-1442. And if you can't wait, you can bid online at liveauctioneers.com.
Okay, and now just one more thing for everybody who is in their car commuting on Monday morning, who pulled this off of iTunes, slapping themselves in the forehead because they didn't listen last week when it came out. When will your next auction be?
We have a two-day auction in May, which is actually not Magic-related. It's playing cards, gambling memorabilia, some cheating stuff, May 31st and June 1st, and then we will be doing another Magic auction at the end of August.
All right, great. Well, thank you again for joining us. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been the iTrix Magic Week in Review. Until next time, get all of the news from the world of magic at iTrix.com.